And today's topic is, will you be a rebellious teen? As you know, this is the book I'm hoping to give as a legacy to my grandchildren, so it's kind of addressed to them. Will you be a rebellious teen? How your parents should be disciplining you, and you should discipline your future children. To start with, we have a quote from 1 Samuel chapter 15, verse 23, where Samuel is speaking to King Saul, "For rebellion is as the sin of divination, and presumption is as iniquity and idolatry," which were Samuel's harsh but accurate words to King Saul when Saul rebelled against God's instructions to annihilate the Amalekites. The police sirens were getting louder, which meant the cops were getting closer. Kerry tried to run faster, but his combat boots were slowing him down, and his out-of-shape muscles were beginning to let him down the very moment he needed them the most. Kerry hadn't showered in a week. His long hair was now matted and filthy. He wasn't quite sure what else was living in his clothes besides him, but since they were his only clothes, he had no choice but to keep wearing them anyway. All because he got angry with his parents, who could not figure out any other way to discipline him except in anger. He didn't feel loved or wanted, so he found a group of friends that took him in, friends that also had long hair and were punked out and were on drugs. They took him in without asking any questions, and soon they were breaking into homes, stealing whatever they could find of value, selling it wherever they could to make money to buy more drugs. Kerry knew that his Uncle Warren's cabin was an easy mark, a place he could break into without getting caught, and a place he could hang out with his buddies. The military souvenirs were stolen, including an officer's sword, and the cabin was trashed. But that was weeks ago. The items had been fenced, the marijuana consumed, and after a horrible argument with Mom and Dad, Kerry felt he had no choice but to run away. His buddies were long gone, and now he was surrounded by the police, who kept him pinned in, stuck in the swampy marsh he found himself in now. There was no escape. This time it would be a felony on his record. The mugshot depicted a teen with a muddy face, matted hair, torn shirt and pants, and although currently invisible to the naked eye, there was a clear capital L engraved on his forehead that everyone but Kerry could see. Uncle Warren was too kind-hearted to press charges when it came to his attention who it was that had committed the crimes. All that, too, was one more unfortunate response whose opposite might have done some good to a young man who needed to feel the consequences of his actions. Kerry was responsible for all his choices, as well as the sad fate he now faced. Even though some might call him a victim of unloving and overly harsh parents and a loving but overly leaning uncle, had Kerry been raised in a home where his parents loved him enough to discipline him correctly, with the proper balance of love and discipline, maybe things would have turned out differently. There are, of course, no guarantees that this would be so, but the likelihood is very, very high that it would have turned out differently for Kerry and his brothers and sister as well. This is a true story, although some of the details of his capture I embellished for literary liberties. It's a true story of a cousin of mine who rebelled against his parents first, and then against the police second, and finally against the whole world. I lost track of my cousin years ago. In fact, I didn't know him hardly at all growing up. His father was my mother's brother, and he too grew up in a strict home where love was not easily perceived. He married a woman that others did not approve of and felt the sting of his family's rejection, which he handed down to his own children in a way that he was not even aware he was doing. It truly breaks my heart to read online of the sad stories of rejected and rebellious teenagers who have chosen to vent their anger in destructive ways, leaving a trail of hatred for parents and all in authority in their wake. One word describes their disrespectful attitude and behavior in my day. It is the word whatever, spoken in a way that means, I don't care what you do to me. I hate myself already. There is nothing much more you can do to me to make me feel any worse about myself. That, of course, is not true. It is simply a veneer, a false front for the real emotions of rejection, hurt, anger, and pain that are boiling under the surface. Grandma and I, as you know, we are giving this to my grandchildren, so I say, Grandma and I are praying daily for you, as you know, that you will come to know Jesus early in life and experience God's love for you in a real way as your parents' love for you as well. And if that's true for you, that you've known God's love, then the likelihood of you sailing through the stormy seas of teenage rebellion will be very small. We do not want you to have to experience the pain of what many parents and teens endure through what are called the, quote, teenage years, the pain of teenage rebellion. And you don't have to. Your relationship with your mom and dad can continue to be as loving as when you were younger, even when you are experiencing the normal desire to express your own independence from their influence. This is normal, since most adults eventually leave the nest and start their own families with their own identities and their own DNA. But that process does not have to be painful. In fact, it can be downright pleasant, and it should be. The Bible in general, and the book of Proverbs in particular, have much to say about how to raise children and how to discipline them for their own good. I'm expecting that your mom and dad will have read this chapter before you do and will have already corrected any minor deviations from God's instructions that they may have taken in the process of parenting you. And so I expect that you'll be learning from them how to do it when you are an adult parenting your own children. Let's get started. Rule number one in good parenting is this: children must know that they are wanted and loved. Our culture today teaches that children are a curse instead of a blessing. That's why most families only have two children. Any more than that will put a strain on several things that parents consider important to them, like time and money and leisure activities. When they get older and they want, quote, their freedom to enjoy what many call retirement, having five or six or more children will cut into those retirement years, or so goes the thinking of many in our materialistic world and culture we live in today. If people took that thinking to the logical end, why would we have any children at all? Makes no sense to me. The Bible says that children are a blessing. Psalm 127, verses 3 through 5 says, Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord, the fruit of the womb a reward. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior are the children of one's youth. Blessed is the man who fills his quiver with them. He shall not be put to shame when he speaks with his enemies in the gate. Barren women in the Bible felt cursed because they could not have children. And in one sense, they were not cursed by God, but cursed by sin inflicted upon the human race by Adam in the Garden of Eden. When other mothers got to hear and enjoy the laughter of their playing children and got to see the wonder in their eyes as they discovered new things about God's creation, and when other mothers got to watch their children grow up to be strong young men and beautiful feminine daughters who would someday marry and have children of their own, children who would become grandchildren that would love and take care of grandmas when the grandmas got old and incapable of taking care of themselves, then barren women would mourn that they had no babies crying in the nursery, or no children playing in the backyard, and no offspring to take care of them when they got old and couldn't take care of themselves. God says that the fruit of the womb is a reward, And these are just some of the rewards that children bring to a parent. A wise parent will know this and consider their children to be just that, a reward. But all too often, parents give off the opposite impression. The impression to children that they are a bother. When parents express irritation with interruptions from their children, or express frustration with another carelessly spilled glass of milk, or get impatient when a child dawdles a bit longer than usual, they are subtly giving the message that their children are a bother rather than a treasure and a reward. These subtle messages are not lost on even the youngest of our family members, but instead are interpreted as acts of rejection each time they are expressed. And they are right. Any child who gets this behavior from a parent day after day will quickly begin to feel that they are not wanted and therefore not loved. This next paragraph is to all parents listening in. Please place yourselves in your child's shoes when you speak to him or yell at him in that tone of voice. How would you feel if you were them? Would you not be cut to the heart and either get angry or sulk away in silence to try and deal with this rejection? Of course you would. And parents, while we are at it, would you speak to any work associate in that tone of voice? Of course you wouldn't, because you know what the end result would be if you did. It would be the end of a friendship or a work relationship. And frankly, it would go on your record that you are a person who is very hard to get along with. So parents, are our children less important than our friends or our workmates? You answer, of course not. But in reality, many of us have treated our children with a disrespect we would never show towards any adult. The lack of love and the feelings of being rejected are, in my opinion, the number one cause of teenage rebellion. The Apostle Paul spoke directly to this issue in both Ephesians and Colossians when he said, "Fathers, do not provoke or exasperate your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord." In Colossians 3:21 illuminates this further. It says, "Fathers, do not provoke your children, lest they become discouraged." One of the chief ways we exasperate and discourage our children is by disciplining our children harshly without the corresponding assurance of unconditional love. That certainly was the case with Carrie, my cousin, at the beginning of this sermon, and I'm sure every one of us can name several more examples of people who chose a life of crime or juvenile delinquency because they grew up in that kind of a home. Children who grow up in an overly harsh and unloving homes have a tendency, when they become parents, to go then to the opposite extreme. Oftentimes, they'll choose to not discipline their children or to limit their discipline to the point that it is ineffective. They do this in the strange belief that less is better for the emotional well-being of their child, when the reality is less discipline is harmful and it's hateful. Here's an anecdotal story of a 15-year-old teen who ran away from home after an argument with his parents when they found marijuana in his room. After 48 hours from home, he was later picked up by the police and delivered to his father first, and then to his mother, who was waiting for him at home. The mom simply said, "If you're hungry, your dinner's in the fridge, otherwise go to your room." For 4 days, she didn't say a word, but on day four, she called him down to the dining room table to have the talk. Here is what she said. I quote, "After 4 days of not speaking, I called him to the dining room table and said, 'Don't speak, just listen. I'm your mum.'" That's how they say it in Australia. "I'm your mum, but I am also a person. What you have done has hurt me more than you will ever know. I've tried to be the best mum I can be, but for you it isn't enough. I don't know what to do, and I don't know how to fix it. I haven't spoken to you because I have nothing nice to say to you. I don't like you. I don't like what you've done to our family. I'm hurt. I'm frustrated. I'm confused. I need time to figure myself out before I can do anything else. I need you to still stay away from me. When I am hurt, I retreat. I need to process my thoughts and feelings and figure it out for myself. That's who I am, and that's how I deal with things. I never mention, look at all the things we do for you. Look at what you have. Look how hard we work to give you nice things. For the first time in his life, I wanted him to realize, I'm not just mom. I'm a person who has feelings. Now, fast forward 3 months. He now attends school every day without fail. He attends before school tutoring offered to him by a very dedicated teacher who recognized his potential and came home with a report card with mostly A's and a few B's. This was the same kid who came home with C's and D's for the past 2 years. Since then, we've talked more about that time. I asked him, what went wrong? What did I do wrong? His response was this, quote, we made it too easy for him. Yes, we yelled and punished, but he still had everything he wanted. He knew how to play us. He knew he had a good life. Parents who would go to the ends of the earth for him, and that was the problem. We had taught him unknowingly it was all about him. We weren't people. We were mom and dad. Unquote. Did you catch what she said? We taught him unknowingly it was all about him. And I maintain the reason they did this is because it was all about them. They gave in to their child more than they should have because they were thinking he'd be grateful and make their lives more livable and peaceful, when in reality they made their lives more stressful and painful. I think the following verse captures what this woman did to her own home. Proverbs 14:1, the wisest of women builds her house, but folly with her own hand tears it down. Solomon has much to say about this tendency to be too lenient with our children. Before I start quoting scriptures from Proverbs, let me preface what Solomon is about to say by saying that Solomon knew his theology quite well. He knew that children are natural born sinners. He knew that they come out of the womb being demanding, controlling, manipulative, and when all else fails to get their way, they learn to become charmers. But it is still all sin. King David speaks of this when he says in Psalm 51:5, behold, I was brought forth in iniquity, and in sin did my mother conceive me. Solomon obviously learned this truth from his father David, as quoted above, because he too admitted as much when he said, folly is bound up in the heart of a child, Proverbs 22:15. And guess where both of them learned it from? Straight from the mouth of God. In Genesis 8:21, we read that God spoke to Noah after the flood was over, promising to never send a flood like that again upon the earth. Noah offered to God a sacrifice of burnt offerings, and here's what God said, quote, and when the Lord smelled the pleasing aroma, the Lord said in his heart, I will never again curse the ground because of man, for the intention of a man's heart is evil from his youth. Now, Jonathan Edwards, the greatest American theologian, said that the word youth in this passage refers to the whole period of time in a person's life preceding their adult years, all the way down to infancy, down to birth. This means that the current idea that children are innocent until their environment corrupts them is pure nonsense. That silliness entered the thinking of humanity from a French philosopher by the name of Jean-Jacques Rousseau. And this poison became one of the pillars of a false worldview we call humanism. Mankind, even babies, are not basically good. They are intrinsically evil. Therefore, the following verses will make a lot of sense as we look at them one by one. So rule number two in good parenting is, children must be disciplined sufficiently. to cause their rebellious behavior to stop. After I speak about the following verses, which address the need to discipline a child, I will speak a bit about how to discipline and how much is enough. But point number one says it needs to be sufficient to stop the rebellious behavior. For now, I will say the severity of the discipline needs to be painful enough to cause the child to regret doing what they just did and give them second thoughts about ever doing it again. Solomon says, "Whoever spares the rod hates his son, but he who loves him is diligent to discipline him." Proverbs 13:24. Does this sound strange to you? Whoever does not spank their children hates their children? That's right. That's what you heard, and Solomon is the wisest man in the world, remember? So he must have a good reason for saying what he did, and I think we will see why in just a second. Do not withhold discipline from a child. If you strike him with a rod, he will not die. Proverbs 23:13. In our house, we used wooden spoons for spanking, which was similar to what Solomon was talking about when he said rod. A rod was a shepherd's tool that he used when a sheep was getting too far away from the flock and too close to a cliff. If that shepherd did not club that sheep on the head with his rod by flinging it from a distance, that sheep would end up falling off the cliff and dying. Getting a whack on the head saved that sheep's life. And in the same way, spankings and groundings and denials can be used in the same way for children to save their lives from dangers they are unaware of. Proverbs 29:15, the rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child left to himself brings shame to his mother. This verse says that discipline with wooden spoons or other devices gives a child wisdom. The kind that says, "Wow, that spanking I got from playing with matches saved me from burning the house down." This verse also says that an undisciplined child will bring shame to a mother. We used to call these kinds of kids who were uncontrolled, undisciplined, we used to call them holy terrors. Never knew what kind of destruction they could cause in someone's home as they jumped off banisters and broke lamps and precious things. That mother who brought them would not be invited back again, ever, and for good reason. Her children were uncontrollable, and she was at fault. Discipline your son, and he will give you rest. He will give delight to your heart. So says Proverbs 29:17. I like this verse. It says that a well-disciplined child is a peaceful child who does not cause stress in a household. Undisciplined children create tension, arguments, fights, and tantrums. They are certainly not the kind of children who bring delight to your heart. Proverbs 19:18, discipline your son, for there is hope. Do not set your heart on putting him to death. Solomon says that if we discipline in love, we will give our children hope. An undisciplined child is one who will not take out the garbage when asked. And therefore, when he gets his first job, he will not take out the garbage at McDonald's when asked. And he will get fired. And he will think it's his boss's fault because he didn't ask nicely enough. And then he will drive home angry and speed, passing a police car as he does and giving the police officer an unkind hand gesture. The police officer will then decide this boy needs to be stopped, and a chase pursues, but since the child was never taught to respect authority, he steps on the gas, careens off the road at 110 miles an hour, smashing into a telephone pole, and his heart stops beating. Do you see where all of this leads? There could be 100 different kinds of scenarios than the one above, but they eventually all end the same. It could be murder, suicide, drug overdose, or careless driving, but the end result is still death. Solomon would call these undisciplined children fools and disciplined children wise. Here's what he has to say about the pain undisciplined children bring to their parents and the joys that disciplined children bring to theirs. Proverbs 10:1, a wise son makes a glad father, but a foolish son is a sorrow to his mother. Proverbs 17:21, he who sires a fool gets himself sorrow, and the father of a fool has no joy. Proverbs 17:25, a foolish son is a grief to his father and bitterness to her who bore him. I'm sure you want a happy home. A home that is not filled with grief and bitterness as the verses above describe. Well then, you will do the hard work of consistently disciplining your children the same way every time, making the punishments always fit the crime. So, here are a few common sense rules. Number one, do not discipline for normal childish carelessness. Adults do not often spill glasses of milk, but when they do, do you think they should be spanked? No, of course not. Nor should children be spanked for accidents that happen simply because children do not have the dexterity and muscle coordination necessary to always keep milk glasses on the table. Two, always discipline using the most severe discipline appropriate for your child for intentional rebellion. Defying mom and dad by hitting them at anger at age 4 or 5 and allowing them to get by with it will lead to a child hitting mom and dad at age 14 and 15 and getting by with it then too. Number three, spank until it hurts enough to cause the child to feel that what they did was far too costly for the consequence endured, and certainly not worth doing it again. None of this swatting children through their diapers, that's just dumb. Do it where it can be felt, and of course, be careful where you do it. If you do it in public, there are always politically correct police who are on the lookout to report people who are disciplining their children biblically, but not the way Dr. Spock would approve. Now, some children do not respond well to spankings. And what I mean by that is they almost enjoy the stimulation and nearly taunt mom and dad to bring it on. But I think those children are rare. If your child tends towards this, then find a discipline that will actually hurt in other ways and be creative. You are the adult, or will be, and you can figure it out. Number four, know why your child is behaving the way they are. Think it through. Why are they behaving just now with tears and crying? Is it because they are hungry, tired, or sick? Figure it out before you resort to any discipline. They may not be appropriate because there's no actual disobedience going on. The child simply has a need that needs to be met. Number five, always, always, always preface a spanking with affirmations of love. A child needs to have the assurance, that assurance, that they themselves are not being rejected. Just their behavior is being rejected and corrected. Number six, never, never yell or discipline in anger. If you find yourself doing this, you are disciplining that child because they are being an irritant to you in some way. Always speak to your child in a soft and loving voice, reminding them of your love and why it is they are about to get their behind reddened. Number seven, always expect a genuine apology after the discipline is over. If that is not forthcoming, they have not yet experienced true and genuine sorrow. Worldly sorrow means being sorry for getting caught, while godly sorrow means feeling genuine remorse for hurting the one who loves them the most, including their heavenly Father. Number eight, if damage has been done, demand restitution. Often an apology to the one offended is enough, but oftentimes property damage has occurred that needs to be paid for and replaced. If a child has broken a lamp out of disobedience, he or she needs to pay for the replacement out of their earnings. Rule number three in good parenting is this: motivate a child to obey by appealing to his love for you and his love for God. The most effective means of discipline is when a child truly loves the person they are offending and hurting. I teach all parents that when a child starts going astray, the best thing a parent can do is to be genuinely sad in front of their child, a sadness that comes from knowing where that child is going and where that child will end up if they continue down this path of rebellious behavior. Even more importantly, children need to know that they are offending their Heavenly Father above, who loves them more than an earthly parent could. Try it on yourself. Does it deeply wound you to know that your latest act of disobedience deeply grieved your mom and dad, just like the verses stated above said it would? Does it affect you in any way to know that they are in their bedroom crying over your latest outburst? I bet it does, big time. And does it make you want to go and apologize sincerely and make things right with them? I'm sure it does, because you love your mom and dad. All of this is true of your Heavenly Father, and here's how it works. When you disobey Him, He gently corrects you. He gives you a heavenly spanking, so to speak. And if you continue to disobey, the spankings get harsher until you finally repent and come back to Him in humility. Listen to these words from the author of Hebrews, quote, And have you forgotten the exhortation that addresses you as sons? My son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord, nor be weary when reproved by Him. For the Lord disciplines the one He loves and chastises every son whom He receives. It is for discipline that you have to endure. God is treating you as sons. For what son is there whom his father does not discipline? If you are left without discipline, in which all have participated, then you are illegitimate children and not sons. Besides this, we have had earthly fathers who disciplined us, and we respected them. Shall we not much more be subject to the Father of spirits and live? For they disciplined us for a short time, as it seemed best to them, but He disciplines us for our good, that we may share in His holiness. For the moment, all discipline seems painful rather than pleasant, but later it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. It's Hebrews chapter 12, verses 5 through 11. My dear children, do you want future children who love the Lord and live godly lives, obeying you out of the love and respect they have for you? Or would you be happier letting your children raise themselves and becoming rebellious teens who fight with you constantly, who never do as they are asked, who slam doors in your face and lock their rooms so you can't talk to them? Of course you don't. That's why your parents don't allow that behavior in your home either. And that is why they are doing you the world's greatest favor by making you obey them out of love and respect. You get it? You will, if you don't already.